This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Let's get into the hot topic segment. For those of you that know, we cut this program in two when we reproduce it and push it out. So we are starting the Hot Topic Live, and our special guest today is none other than Casey Crawford, the founder and CEO of Mubin Mortgage. Casey, brother, it's so good to have you here with us.
Man, glad to be here, Dave. How are you doing today?
Awesome. We were sitting in your office just a short time ago, a few weeks ago, and I was just so amazed at where you've come from in 11 years, as we put in the pushing this out to everyone, the movement from zero to eighth largest lender in the nation. And now, have you overtaken eighth? Are you now the seventh? I mean, I know you're growing so quickly. Is it eighth? What is it?
Oh, man, yeah, I think it's top thing. I think we're number six or seven in the U.S. for purchase. We kind of track purchase a lot. So, yeah, that's how. And you've been there every step of the way, man. Yeah, I think a lot of folks have heard that story. If I typed in how to start a mortgage bank on Google, and you walked out, man. Yeah, we've been on this journey together for a decade, so it's been pretty special to share with you.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, well, I'm so excited to share this with you. We also have joining us on the podcast Andy Schell, who played a big role during many of the development stages of the company. We also have Alice Alvey, and we have Joe Farr and Alan Pollock. So we're all just excited to hear about this journey. But Andy, seeing as you and I were there at the beginning with it, I just wanted to let you go in and start off with saying hello as well.
Hey, Casey, it's such a privilege to speak with you again. Welcome to Lickin' on Lending.
Man, it's great to be here, Andy. It's great to reconnect with you also, man. Andy set our books up from day one, helped us get our very first. Andy, I don't know if you remember, but I mean, we had to get a warehouse line in 2008. Right, about the only way you were getting money from a bank at that time was with a gun. It was tough, man. You helped put together a business plan and a pitch for us. That I don't know if you remember, we got a $5 million warehouse line from Texas Capital, and I was just so thrilled, man. $5 million. How could you ever fund more than $5 million of loans in a month? That was a pretty exciting evolution for us, man. You were right there in the beginning, so thank you so much. I think we're one of Texas Capital's biggest customers right now. So, been a great relationship with those guys too for a decade.
Exactly, and you went through the FHA approval process and how to preserve your cash flow and all the challenge. I mean, it's to look back from where you are today with the momentum and the pace and the market presence that you have. You were just like everybody else. I mean, you had a great story and you had a great heart and you had a great knowledge base. But it was.
Yeah.
We might
have been a little deficient to some of your other customers. I mean, in fact, I'm sure we were. There was not a. I think my partner Toby at one point described us as fledgling in our first year, and that might have been generous also.
Well,
so, yeah, no. When Google how to start a mortgage bank, you're definitely starting from the beginning.
Can I throw out a quick comment about Toby, just real fast, Dave? Because one of the stories about Toby is how he got his folding table and went around to the various offices and sat there and worked with people to work with workflow. And one of the things that I talk to CEOs and COOs about today is you need the CEO is setting the vision, and the COO should know every single nut, bolt, screw, desk, wobbly chair in every single office. I mean, Toby knew everything, and you have to be like that to get the workflow running smoothly. Casey, you were one of the early adopters of a 10-day approval. I mean, you pioneered that strategy and blew everybody away. It was amazing.
Yeah. No, we always kind of talked about looking at obstacles in our industry as opportunities, right? And so when Dodd-Frank came out with the new disclosure time periods, we saw that, and I think some of the big banks in the U.S. started calling our realtor partners and saying, hey guys, just so you know, the laws have changed and you can now expect 60-day closings. And we heard that and it was like music to our ears. We knew that was an opportunity for us to navigate through what was going to be an obstacle for others. And so that's when we re-architected and we kind of formalized some of our processes to go with a 6-7-1, 6-hour upfront underwrite, 7-day process, and 1 day to close, which is closing on the 8th business day, which is as fast as they were allowing anyone to close. So we said, hey, that's not going to be the exception, that's going to be the norm, and that's just going to be our standard of excellence. And that allowed us to separate from a lot of other folks when they were looking at a new obstacle as a reason to give excuses as to why service was going to leave the industry. We saw it as an opportunity to outpace ourselves from the rest of the folks.
And my last point, Dave, for Toby and Casey, is that one of the keys to success is when preparedness meets opportunity. And that's part of the story of Move It Mortgage, in my opinion. There was opportunity, but there was rock-solid preparedness. They knew their numbers. They knew their systems. They knew their processes. They had partners that supported them. And that was part – I mean, Casey, what would you say to that?
You know, well, I appreciate the compliment. I think in my mind we were far less prepared than I would have liked to have been. I think, you know, God certainly blew some doors off and surprised us even with some of the opportunity laid before us. But I mean, to your point, I think absolutely you align yourself and prepare yourself for that opportunity when it comes. And that really oftentimes is the difference of success and failure when the opportunity presents itself. And I talk to my kids about that a lot. We talk about that a lot in business as well, as preparing yourself for opportunity as they come. I wouldn't want to give anyone the wrong impression that you know, we were so prepared and so ready for all these things that we didn't have a whole lot of surprises that jumped up and, you know, we had to navigate through over the last decade, because it has definitely been an interesting learning journey for all of us during this. It's been a really, really special one.
When we sat in your office, one of the things we talked about, now the reason why I wanted you to come on, so many people have watched that video that you have done, testimonial video you've done for us, and we really appreciate that so much. And people get this idea, man, they did it. They came from zero to nothing, and it must be easy because I think I can go out and do it too. And it wasn't without its growing pains, and it's that journey. And you and I are sitting in your office here recently, and what a spectacular office. Anyone else has to get a chance to go to the Movement campus and there in Charlotte, I encourage you to do so. It'll inspire you. I took a video of it. We're going to put it up here for you all to enjoy and get a virtual tour of it. But when we were sitting there, we talked about this, and you said, sometimes, Dave, it's just we don't open up enough through those difficult spots. And I remember that phone call, one of those difficult spots that came. You called me, and you said, Dave, you know, we've lost some money. This is the early days. We're losing some money.
I'll tell the story for you, so I'll share all the dirty details. So it was we had launched the company in September of 2008. You know, we put our flag and we had gotten our full FHA approval, gotten our warehouse line, all those tough things that we all walked through together for that year. We're ready to do business.
Yes.
Hired underwriters, hired processors, planted a stake in the ground. September 2008. Let's go open our doors. And October of 2008 happens. And I just watched the HBO documentary again on the kind of too big to fail, just that economic crisis time period. And we literally, no one bought houses for 60 days. And all these great projections that Andy and I had worked so hard on a spreadsheet were not coming to pass. And we lost almost $100,000 in 60 days, our first 60 days in business.
Remember that.
And, you know, I was looking at the capital base dwindle. I said, man, this might have been the biggest financial mistake I've ever made. Going to bankrupt my family. You know, this was just a horrible mistake, right? And there was no prospects at that time in 2008, in October, that the housing market was about to pick up. I mean, we were on the verge in our nation of just financial collapse, and I had gone headlong into financial services. I mean, this could not have looked like a worse bet at the time. Yeah, and I called you and said, did not know what to do, was really beside myself. And I think it's so important, man, right? That I've talked a lot about the joy in life is on the journey, not the destination. You know, the joy is the journey, and so much of that joy is the men and women you share it with. And you better have some people on your team that you trust and that you love and you know love you, because you're going to go through adversity. You're going to hit those times. And when you do, man, you need some people on the team to encourage you, to lift you up, and to tell you to keep moving forward. And that's what you guys did for me at that time. And, you know, it was
I'll never forget that. Yeah, I remember exactly where we were parked, because Andy and I were driving back from Dallas. We were just south of Fort Worth, and you called, and he said, I really need to talk with you. And I said, just the tone of it, you're usually such an up guy, and go like, wow, what's going on? I said, Andy, we need to pull over. So I pulled over into a shady parking lot. I could show you right the spot we were talking to you. And I said, Casey, I just have a heart because of your why, which is what I want to get to next. Because you're anchored on a solid why, I just believe this is going to turn around for you. Don't quit. Would you promise me you just give it 90 more days? And you said, you asked some good questions. Why? And I kept coming back to this one thing. It's your purpose. If you believe you're called to do this, then you need to press through this place. You're an athlete. You know about pressing through. And it was, I stirred you, I encouraged you, and you pressed through. And now look at this. I wonder how many dreams, I wonder how many people that aborted a business plan and aborted a vision of what could transform thousands and thousands of lives, and now countries in your case, and were aborted because of difficulties in those places. I mean, it was tough. You said, Dave, Michelle's looking at me like I'm crazy for continuing this thing. I really think this needs. I'm thinking seriously about shutting it down, and I'm going no. And I remember that moment where I looked at myself and I'm going, can I in good conscience encourage him? And I did. And I tell you now, look back. So let's talk about your why. What brought you to that place that anchored you, that made you double down in probably one of the most painful places? Nothing like the pain in the probably the worst is having family struggles, but the pain in the pocketbook is it's ugly. Talk
it's
about
real.
That. What was
yeah,
your why?
It's real.
Yeah.
No, so we were in Charlotte in 2007, and you said, you know, they call Charlotte the first city built on banking. So when the Great Recession hit, man, we were just watching pain and suffering all over our city. And, you know, I was really watching how Americans had lost trust in financial services across the U.S. and really at that point then around the world in that next year. And, you know, I've always been a follower of Jesus my whole life and kind of studied his teachings and things. And in Matthew 22, some Pharisees asked him, hey, what's the most important commandment in the whole Bible? And as an ex-football player, I appreciated the Cliff Notes version of this whole big book. He said this. He said, look, if you want to sum up all the laws, it's summed up like this. It love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Second commandment is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. You do these two things, you do well. And I thought, man, if ever there was a time for America to love their neighbor, it was the middle of this financial recession. And, man, if ever there was a time to restore Americans' hope in the way financial services companies should act, it was now as they lose it. And so what would it look
That's
like
right.
if a financial services company worked to love their neighbor as themselves, really look to treat people like family, offer products with integrity that were designed in the long-term best interest of the customers they were given to? And I said, man, what would it look like to create a company that people actually like to come be a part of, a community? You know, we were acting in one another's long-term best interest. We were really loving each other because we were acting in each other's long-term best interest. And I appreciate you complimenting our headquarters. You know, when you're the
gorgeous
founder, you know, you can get credit or blame for a lot of things. And but, you know, we architected this building. We've architected this company and community as the one we always wanted to be a part of. You know, so what would it look like to build a company, a community with a purpose that we felt good about investing our lives into? Because we know we're going to ask other folks to invest their lives into it. And, you know, with 40, 50, 60-hour work weeks in America today, I think when you're building a company, you are really inviting someone to invest their life into your vision. So you better have a vision that is bigger than just profit. I think, you know, no one is super interested in investing their life if it's simply into driving profit for shareholders. That's just not, at least it's not for me. It's not a compelling vision, reason for me. And so we said, man, if we're going to do this, let's build a company that has a purpose that's transcendent, that's bigger than any of us. And for me, it was really one that honored God and my faith to say, hey, man, I will feel good standing before God having invested my life by trying to honor him by loving people. And we use the operating definition of love like this. We say to love is to act in the long-term best interest of another. And I think financial services companies were certainly at least being accused of doing anything but that in 08. So that was our purpose, was to love people by offering a redemptive picture of what financial services can look like inside of American communities around the U.S. And that's why we were about to throw the toilet 60 days in.
You were about ready to hit. You had your hand on the flush lever, and I remember that. I'm going, and I said, I asked this question. I remember, like, why did you do this? What led you to do this? Let's go back to that. And if that was wrong, hit the flush lever. But if it's right, stick with it and follow it through. And I think those times, those moments, and I think, so number one, what is anyone listening to this is what is your why and what are you doing it? And the second thing I want to go into, Aunt Casey, is we're sitting there and we were talking how you were sitting with John Maxwell. Everyone talks about the successful part of the journey. This is one of those early ones where it's like losing an engine as you just take off the runway on an airplane. I mean, you're looking for a place to ditch it, and you didn't. You stuck with it. But you sat with leaders, you sat with world leaders now, and you've talked all about the various things that you have had as an impact. But what are some of the other tight spots? As this thing grew, that wasn't the only tight spot that has come along your journey. If you could share some of those, because I think it's in those moments how we handle them. Did it come back to your why, your purpose that took you through those, or what happened? Talk about those.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I do really have a heart to encourage, you know, entrepreneurs, loan officers, realtors, because I think, I mean, loan officers and realtors are just miniature entrepreneurs, right? I mean, like, yeah, you know, realtors particularly are independent contractors who wake up and build their business each day. Loan officers, very similarly. So, you know, anyone that's building their own business and just anyone in life, man, the probably the bigger your vision, the greater the adversity you're going to face. And my goodness, man, what's really encouraged me is having to gotten to meet some great leaders over the last decade who have built, you know, organizations much, much larger than mine and gone much further in life in so many regards. Man, you know, there's a danger, I think, from just looking at the outside and all the success and going, oh, man, wow, so-and-so's life must just be so perfect and everything just seems to come so easily to them. And man, oh, I tell you, when you peel back the cover of the book that's so shiny and start digging into the day-to-day and the, you know, the relationship challenges, man, they're like really tough relationship challenges, right? There's human beings involved, right? And I'm one of them and probably the most jacked up in the equation most times, right? But I know, like, you know, anytime human beings are trying to work together, even to accomplish a purpose that they're passionate about, even to accomplish a deep and good and worthy why, man, we bring our own junk to the equation. And, you know, there are a lot of, like, relational challenges and working with a lot of other human beings. At one point, I said a year or two ago, I said, I don't know if it's so important what I'm doing as much as just trying to manage relationships, between folks. Yeah, you're going to see deep adversity in anything you do. And the bigger your vision, the bigger the adversity. Understand that. Like, the larger your vision, the more adversity you're going to face. I had someone ask me one time, man, did I ever think movement would grow this big this quickly? And the truth is, in absolute naivety, I believe movement will grow more quickly and it will be easier. I thought it was going to be easier and we do more faster. And, we're overwhelmed by all the incredible things we've gotten to do, but it's a more difficult climb uphill.
Yeah.
I remember I got to sit with Admiral Mullen, who's the chairman of Joint Chiefs, and I was asking him about growing an organization. I think, you know, at some point, you know, a couple million active and retired duty servicemen and women essentially reported up to him. And I was talking about, hey, man, I think we'd gotten to 1,000 employees at that point. And I was explaining, you know, it's always bright when you go to ask somebody for advice, tell them all the things you know first, right?
Yeah.
I started to pontificate to this incredible leader about how much easier it was going to be going from 1,000 to 10,000, because it's just, you know, the initial launch, right, getting the spaceship launched, that's you burn up all the energy and the breaking the atmosphere. And once you break the atmosphere, it's so much easier and da-da-da. And, you know, it's going to be easier going from 1,000 to 10,000 than it is from 1 to 1,000. He just shook his head. So, no, you have no idea how much more difficult it's going to be, because you're going to start dealing with second and third and fourth level leaders. And you're going to lose your culture in the middle, your middle management, your middle leadership.
Wow. I remember this.
Culture.
Exactly. I remember.
Yeah.
This.
Remember
exactly.
This man? Yeah. And you know, I heard him, like hearing Hendricks, like I heard him, but I didn't hear him. I had to think again, man. And my youthful exuberance and lack of experience, I went, okay, maybe that's true in the military, but you just don't have no idea how exciting this vision that we're embarking on is and what we're going to be able to do and all these kinds of things. And then you run into that. You know, you run into, now I have to inspire third and fourth and fifth level leaders and align them with a culture. And the further down that goes, I had another great mentor tell me, you need to say less and say it more often, right?
Yeah.
The vision has to be more clarified. And repeated more often, right, over and over again for everyone in the organization to get it and absorb it. So, our story has been one of lots of trials. We had, you know, very publicly last year a little video of me doing a talk to our team after we let the team members go, kind of spun around our industry a bunch and didn't know it was going to do that. But, I mean, that was a painful day, having to let somebody know they don't have a job anymore. I was fired.
Yep.
The Panthers, and it was the hardest professional day of my life. And you know, that's tough to ever do that to someone else. You know, let them know, hey, we don't have a place on the team for you anymore. You know, market shift and things happen, but at the end of the day, the leader, you feel responsible. Man, I was cheerful that day and a lot of days, you know, leading up to that, at a really painful thing we had to walk through. And, yeah, anybody that's on a journey right now, just know you're not alone, and expect adversity. Don't be surprised by it.
Well, I think an adversity comes in the form of people, and I think those are the biggest challenge you have. How do you surround yourself? And Alan was complimenting you on your culture you have developed there. What I want to get to is get around to the regulars that we have on the podcast, starting off with Alice, as we're such a gentleman around here. We let the ladies go first, and let Alice, and then Joe, and then Alan, and then back to you, Andy, on some of the questions you might have for Casey about his growth. Alice?
Hi, Casey. Well, I've been taking lots of notes already, so this is great. Thank you for all your insight. One of the questions I have, you know, as you've grown, you mentioned that, you know, don't lose your middle managers in a sense. So how did you manage to kind of communicate through those as the levels were growing and the
great question
were growing? How did you manage through that?
Yeah, that is a great question. It's absolutely one we're still kind of working on, but I think that one first piece of advice is the one I'd really encourage. You know, really clarify your mission. Clarify what it is you want to communicate, what it is you want them bought in around, right? Is it, you know, there's that great story in Mullally's, Ford story where it's, hey, it's one Ford, right? Like I mean, the janitors can, repeat the mission statement. So really clarifying what the mission is, I think is important. And then making it as concise as possible, right? I feel pretty good about everybody you ask. You say, hey, what's our mission statement? They say, we exist to love and value people. Most of them, I'd say 75% can say we exist to love and value people by leading a movement of change in our industry and corporate cultures and in communities across America. Right? And you know, most of them can say, hey, what do you mean by love? They'd say, hey, to love is to act in the long-term best interest of another. Now, you guys have just heard me repeat our mission statement and the definition about it, and the folks around here have heard it 10,000 times. But I think, you know, clarifying and then repeating that purpose is, oh my goodness, it's just so critical. And I get tired of hearing myself say this stuff, but I'm just reminded over and over again up and down the organization that we need to say less and say it more often. So when you have to say less, you better be very intentional to choose your words and choose that mission carefully. And then when you do, make sure it's a powerful one and repeat it.
And then what I'd say is if you have any trouble, remember, just walk between the first floor and the second floor because it's on massive letters on the wall and the stairway behind on the way up and down. It's just massively spoken out there. Let's run over to Joe. Any questions you have for Casey in this journey?
Hey, Alex, can I give you one more? Hey, Dave, can I give you one more?
Oh, yeah, Dave, do it.
I wouldn't want to miss this one, man. So Maxwell, you know, has taught me this one a lot, man. I love him. And he's one of the greatest communicators, I think, of telling you what to do.
Yes.
But John would say, hey, tell is great, show is better, right? So
that's good.
I would say, hey, as you're thinking about communicating your purpose, your why, telling people what it is fantastic. Look for opportunities then to show them. Let them experience that.
So
let them experience what you mean by loving your neighbor, by, you know, existing to love and value people. And we do that on like vision trips around the world. We go do shoe drive, you know, where we wash kids' feet and give them new pairs of shoes. We really try to experientially show them what we mean in that mission statement. So say less, say it more, and then don't tell, show.
Yeah, that's it. That don't tell, show. That's so good. Joe, looking at the clock here, I want to respect Casey has a hard stop in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Ah, not enough time. Never enough time. Okay,
Alice,
go for it.
Alice asked about the middle management, but you know, there's a lot of stress put on the I don't want to call them lowest level, but the clerical level, everyone in the organization. Did your philosophy apply equally to everyone in the organization?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we exist to love and value people up and down the organization, right? And so that starts, I think, for every leader, that starts with your direct team, you know, the team that you're leading. And most of us, man, we're leading a team and we're on a team. So you're kind of, my partner's a great saying that leaders need to know how to follow. Most of us are both followers and leaders. And so we're thinking through, man, how do we love that team that we're on and how we love everybody in the organization? So we look for opportunities to do vision shifts. I mean, I just left a workout. And the workout, we have our CFO, our COO, our head of marketing, Big Jake, you know, all these guys are there.
Yeah.
I'm working on, and we have our newest processors. We have you know, folks that, you know, brand new to the organization, and we're all partnered up. We're in there sweating together, working together, encouraging each other, and doing life together. And so that's an expression for us of just saying, hey, it doesn't matter, you know, what, you know, the title is before your name. You're a person in this organization. We love you, man. We're going to come alongside you. We're going to do life next to each other, and we want to see you being your best self, using all the gifts that God's given you, and really fully living those out. And so, you know, that transcends up and down the organization. Do you do it perfectly? Heck no. Again, because I said, you know, they're stuck with me, and I got all kinds of flaws that I'm trying to work through. But you got to be intentional, right? You got to be intentional. So
yeah.
we are very intentional about trying to love and value people at all, you know, levels of our organizational chart.
That's fast.
Alan, real quick, you got one of the best technology guys, if not the best, with Henry Santos there. So, Alan,
oh,
you know
man.
Him, and yeah, he's the best.
I do love awesome. Henry. You know, I'll keep it short so we have some time for Andy. But Casey, just, you know, just very impressed and follow all the good news and just how open you are with your organization and the transformation you're making to the industry. You maybe just share for a minute or two how important the adoption of technology is within your organization.
Yeah, 100%. So we do have, you know, we're thankful to have one of the best technology leaders, I think, in all of financial services in the world, you know, working
yeah.
with us. He's an amazing team member, amazing man. And what he's really helped us do is think about great partnership. We still believe in partnership. You know, I Googled how to start a mortgage bank, and we brought in some partners to help us architect it, in, you know, Andy and Dave. And, you know, we still take that same position. If we want to be working with the best technologists, not in the United States, but in the world. So we signed a massive partnership with a company, Infosys, that actually built Marcus for Goldman Sachs. And they've been a super partner for us and really helping us aggregate folks like Blend. Nima Gamsari is a great friend of mine. Man, we've done some really neat things together over the last few years. And others to think about how do we deliver the best process at the best price to the consumer. And to us, that looks like loving and valuing people when you're, you know, serving them well the way you'd want to be served. And I'll tee Andy up for his last question here because it's the thing he encouraged me on when we first set the company up. I think our whole industry is still trying to figure out how do we leverage technology to create the best process and experience for the consumer and create a variable cost
yeah,
structure for the
That's
organization.
Right.
That
exactly.
you got to use for variable costs because this – I mean, we've seen the last 60 days, this industry can really balloon and then contract very, very quickly, man. And we got to be able to better leverage technology to navigate those cycles.
That's a T-ball shot, Andy. He teed it up for you.
There well you go. There. Well, thanks, Casey. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Variable cost structure is important. So, but back to a little bit of the back in time. So Dave and I were in the car. You called. Dave's inspiring you. You and I didn't get on the phone. And we talked about, well, how much money can you get from selling your FHA ticket? But then you and I and Umi, she's still around, we got on the phone and we thought, how can we stretch your cash flow to get you past the bad? And obviously things turned around almost immediately and things were better. So how today do you deal with the details of the business so that you're able to drive the inspiration in your vision?
Yeah, well, you know, just like back then, I was trying to leverage great people, and we have just an amazing staff. I mean, that was a decade ago. We now have Laura Bowles, who I think is the, you know, best CFO in the
amazing.
Business period,
yeah.
And she is she's like a right hand to me. And so, yeah, she she is more than in the detail of all of our books. We have a great operations team. But, yeah, I think it's really about putting together a world-class team who's going to own their part of the business for you so that we can all, like, you know, do what we do well and enjoy life, build a great company, and live out our purpose.
Perfect. It's so good. Yeah, I want to respect your time. Jake was so
Thanks
specific.
So much,
he said, you got to let him go. So thank you so much, Casey. Appreciate you so much. And looking forward to being here with you again soon. Blessings, brother.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
You bet. Folks, that was Casey Crawford, founder, CEO of Movement Mortgage. And I encourage you to check out the videos that are out there on the company. It's well known, especially some of the videos that he did. Andy, that was a fun engagement we did together, my friend. That was one that when we were working together. And it was fun. It was truly a team effort in how we applied each other's skill sets. Some of it was encouragement. Some of it was just roll up your sleeves and get into the numbers and dirty stuff. So thank you so much for participating.
It's hard for people who weren't there at the time. I know Joe and Alice, or I'm not sure about Alan, but the world was falling apart around us. That was 2008.
Yeah.
Like you said, you couldn't get a warehouse line. I mean, we spent tons of time just trying to get warehouse lines for folks. I mean, you didn't know how bad it was.
I remember that.
But we stayed true to our conviction and stayed true to our discipline, worked through it, doing the things that we know how to do well, and, you know, the industry turned around, and we've had bumps and bruises, and hopefully we'll never have a bump like that, like 2008 and 9 and 10 again.
Well, I tell you, I look at what the opportunities are in this market today, and I think they're tremendous. And if you can build a successful company like that during the hard times, you should be able to build it easier in these times. But we do have hard times ahead. That's just the reality. Joe, you know those days. You've been through them. We've been through them all together at the various times. Alan, Alice, Joe, Andy, myself, we understand that. And I think it really comes down to having a defining principle and purpose of why you're doing what you're doing. And I think when you do have that, it can make such a difference to carry you through those different spots. And then really surrounding yourself. And a lot of people have requested this podcast. That's why we went out and I really sought out. I mean, I talk to Casey regularly. I'm a part of a group that supports him in a number of ways. And what we do is, it comes down to this. He would say this. Number one is, why are you in the business? What are you doing this for? Profits always follow purpose. It's not purpose follows profits. And that's probably the number one thing, and what you're doing about it. We'll get Toby Harris on. Casey introduced me to him and as my brother from another mother. And boy, that turned out to be true. He and I are dear, dear friends to this day. And we share life together. And I think that's what it is all about. Learn more about what they're doing. Learn more about what you can do to make a difference. Another guy that's done an amazing job is Kevin Stitt at Gateway Mortgage. He's now the governor of Oklahoma. So you don't know where your success will take you. And I could tell a story about Casey and one of the presidents of the countries that my daughter was going to for traveling in the summer. And Casey was saying, oh, the president of that country just left my office. I said, what's the president of an African country doing in your office? He says, well, we did something. He's always so low-key about it. He says, we just did some things in his country, and we made sure all the money investment we made stayed there. And he came in and flew in to thank me. I said, you're serious? He says, do you want a cell phone number if your daughter needs anything? Here's... And I go, it was pretty amazing. You will not realize, folks, the lives you can touch, not just here, not just in your company. Kevin's the governor of Oklahoma. Casey is influencing the world. What are you influencing? Do not underestimate what your potential is. Appreciate you being here with us, everybody. Have a great week. Looking forward to check out the website for who we're going to have here next week. Andy, Alice, and Joe, and Alan, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you all. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.